Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is baseball handicapper Eric Strasser. And we'll be talking about his book, Betting Baseball for Profit. We'll be talking to Eric in a few minutes. In the news, at the start of this year's World Series of Poker at the Rio Hotel here in Las Vegas, there will be an event that could top 20,000 entries, including rebuys. They are calling this the Colossus. There will be four starting flights on Friday, May 29th, and Saturday, May 30th, where for $565 you can get a seat. If you blow out or you don't have enough chips that you want to continue, you can re-enter all over again in one of the later flights. Also, in each of the four starting flights, there will be space for late full-price entries to fill up seats caused by players blowing out early. I guess they figure the $565 price makes it affordable to a huge number of people who can enter and say, I played at the World Series. What do you make of this, Richard? Have you entered yet?
No, I haven't. The main thing is they said, book your buy-in early or you're going to be standing in long lines. So, if you want to play in that event, I would, sign up for it now. And I'm sure they'll have satellites and stuff like that. So, you'll probably be able to get in for, $50 or something by playing a sit and go.
And you can sign up for all four, and then if you win enough in the first to keep going, you can cancel the others and get all your money back, which sounds interesting.
Yeah, sounds like a good deal.
So I guess Harrah's needs that float for 2 months, and wouldn't surprise me. All right, let's talk to our guest. Eric Strasser has been betting baseball for a while. He moved to Vegas in 2009, and in the last year wrote a book called Betting Baseball for Profit. Eric Strasser, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you, Bob. It's a pleasure to be here. I've been a fan of yours and Richard's for a long time.
Thank you for saying that. How is betting baseball different from and how is it similar to betting football or basketball?
Well, the most obvious difference is that baseball is primarily a moneyline sport. Every team, they say, will win 54 games. Every team will lose 54 games, and that's those extra 54 games that make the season. But because even the worst teams don't have records like 2-14 or 3-13 like they do in the NFL, every team is going to win at least 55 to 60 games, and 60 games is just a horrible season. We bet baseball primarily on the money line. You can bet on a run line, which for the most part will be a run and a half, with the favorite being favored and then a money line off of that run line. But for the most part, you're betting a team to win. So it's a little bit different in that your team can't lose in cover unless you're betting the underdog on the run line. Well, that's certainly possible, but it's usually when you're betting a team, you're betting to win.
Is it easier to find edges in the money line than in the run line? I mean, do you find you're making more of your bets on the money line than the run line?
Well, as an advantage gambler, as you are, you're familiar with the process of correlation, correlated bets. And correlated bets, for the most part, money lines are correlated to run lines. So you get roughly the same edges in a money line and a run line. However, the game has changed in the last few years because with all of the, or a majority of the drug use being knocked out of baseball and all the steroid cheats being caught, Scoring has dropped a lot. So the value of a run and a half with a total of seven is obviously much greater than the value of a run and a half with a total of nine. And that being the case, I think the books have probably caught up by now. But as the scoring totals have been dropping over the last couple of years, there have been edges with underdogs just because scoring has dropped and, you know, the value of that run and a half has increased. But for the most part now, things have caught up and those edges are pretty much gone.
I love the irony of this. The week we have a guy on the show talking about betting on baseball, Pete Rose applies for reinstatement to Major League Baseball. As most of you probably remember, Pete Rose received a lifetime ban for betting on baseball, specifically betting on his team to win when he was managing the Cincinnati Reds. Now, you don't have to have a comment on this, Eric, but if you do, what do you think about this?
Well, I think it's a tough call either way because he was one of the greatest players of all time, and I don't think there's anybody that would argue with that comment. He led 4,230 hits. He led Major League history in hits. He's had the most hits. But at the same time, the integrity of the game is really affected by especially a manager who's betting on a team. It's not even the obvious things that a manager can do, but let's just say you have a reliever who has pitched 2 days in a row and he probably should get the day off because his arm is a little bit tired or he's having a little bit of a problem, his shoulder is barking. But the manager, he has a bet on his team that day and he says, I got to win this game today. And now he takes that reliever who shouldn't be pitching and he pitches him. Then maybe he loses him to the DL for 15 days. There's a lot of little subtle things that a manager can do during a game that are really going to affect the integrity of the team season. So if it were up to me, if somebody said, Eric, you make the call, what are you going to do with Pete Rose? My opinion would be I'd put him in the hall and I'd display all of his accomplishments and I would also display all of his faults and talk about all of the things that he did and why they are against the rules. I mean, I think people understand why it's against the rules, but I don't know that people really understand just how much damage a manager gambling on his team can do to the game and to the team. But I would make that a significant part of the display. And to me, I think he belongs in there, but I think all of it belongs in there, including the bad stuff.
Do you have any expectation that Major League Baseball is going to come and ask your opinion?
Yeah. No, but do you think that he will get in? I mean, do you think it's been long enough that they will?
Well, I think he will get in, but the question is when. I think he'll get in before Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Well, it's now or never, I believe, because Rob Manfred just replaced Bud Selig as commissioner earlier this year. So now we have a situation where it's a fresh set of eyes looking at it. If Bud Selig were still commissioner, he would have no shot. Bud Selig was never going to let Pete Rose into the Hall of Fame. But now this is one of the ways. Manfred is doing a lot of things. We were talking before the show about the clock in spring training now, really pushing the pace of play and really pushing teams to play faster. That's one of them. There are other things, too. And this can be one place where Manfred sort of, I guess the word would be, creates his own legacy in the sense that he's differentiating himself from Selig. So this could be one place where you could see a guy who's really looking to branch out on his own and make his own mark. This is one of the things that he could do that would really, seriously, create his own mark very quickly. So I think it's a possibility.
All right.
On that subject of pushing the teams to play faster, do you think that will hurt pitchers and make scoring go up, or do you think it'll affect the game?
I honestly don't think it will have any effect, and the reason is because athletes are victims isn't the right word. Athletes are creatures of habit. They go to the ballpark at 10 in the morning for a one, or well, let's say noon for a a 7 o'clock game. You know, they basically they open their mail. They do all of their things during the day. They play the game. Then they go out to dinner. Then they go home. Then 2 days later, they get on a plane and they fly to another city. Then they go home. Baseball players, they play 162 games in 6 months. So they play almost every day, and it just becomes everything is habit. And I think this is going to be the same thing. The new rule is the pitcher has to be on the mound and have completed his warm-up tosses for the next inning with 30 seconds before the end of the commercial break. They've been doing this through spring training with a clock, so the pitchers can see how much time they have, and they know exactly how much time they have. And by this point, each pitcher's been on a mound at least three times. I think they've kind of figured it out. And I think as we get closer to the season and then roll into the season, I think it's just going to be habit. I think it's going to be a very seamless transition, and it's a good idea because it will speed the game up, but I don't think it will affect the quality of play at all.
Do you think that rule of bothered Will Ferrell?
Can you believe people bet on spring training games, Bob?
All right. Now, to bet on baseball, you basically need to live in Nevada or have some sort of out-of-country middleman for betting on online sportsbook, where directly it's currently illegal for Americans to place bets. Is this correct?
Or know your neighborhood bookie.
Right. It's no different than the corner store, the corner candy store that I grew up with in New York, and pretty much
my town is in
every town. Yeah, in every town in America, the guy there is there.
So how's betting in baseball different in Las Vegas than it was in New York with your bookie?
Well, way back when, we used to bet into 20-cent lines in baseball, and now we have what's called the dime line. And most of the casinos in Nevada have used the dime line. Some of them don't anymore. Stations went to a 15-cent line last year. I haven't made a baseball bet in Stations, you know, since they went to the 15-cent line.
Wasn't there a 5-cent line at one time?
There is still sometimes. It's more of a gimmick, but the nickel line does exist. So, but the key thing here is now, and this is really the big difference, if you're betting offshore, the number of bets that are available to you each day is just, it's almost too much to handicap, because every game you have a money line, who's going to win the game, and there's a money line attached. You have a total. You have a run line, the favorite, usually -1.5. It can be 2.5 if you have a great pitcher like a Clayton Kershaw against, say, an Edison Volquez or a Trevor Cahill, you might find a run line of 2.5, but it's unusual. More often than not, you'll find -1.5, -190, rather than -2.5. Books don't like to put 2.5 out there because there's 31% of Major League Baseball games are decided by one run. The 2.5 runs, they really have to shade the favorite to get any action, so they don't like to do that. Then you have a five-inning line. There's a five-inning money line. There's a five-inning total as well. There are no five-inning run lines. But then also you have live betting now that has come across, and at the end of every half inning you might be able to catch a live line. You have player propositions, strikeouts. Justin Verlander, more or less 6.5 strikeouts. Who will have more total bases, Billy Hamilton or Sterling Marte when the Reds play the Pirates? All of these bets are out there because it's so easy for the online bookmaker to just list all of these things. And as a result, there's almost too much to go through. Even a guy like me who spends several hours a day handicapping, you just almost can't get to all the bets. I mean, you can run your numbers, you can do your work, but there's just so much. So that's really the difference between betting in Nevada and betting elsewhere.
All right, so the key to betting baseball has to be in being able to handicap. Now, you must come up with some kind of prediction of what a fair line would be, and then compare that line to what's being offered at the books. So there's a number of ways to handicap, and in the book you present the way that you found works for you, but you say it's different than what you did last year or 5 years ago. Now, what percentage of motivated people do you believe could use your book as a guide and come away as a profitable baseball handicapper?
Well, I'm going to break that question into two parts.
Okay.
I think everybody who bets on baseball can get something out of it. At least I hope so. That was my hope when I wrote the book, and the early reviews on the book have been have indicated that that's the case. Even people who are extremely sophisticated bettors, names around town that you guys would both know, have told me that they've really gotten something out of the book. The thing about, now, I believe everybody will get something out of it. How many can profitably bet on baseball? I believe that if I can do it, anybody can do it. But betting on baseball is an awful lot of work. You cannot be lazy, and you cannot handicap a game correctly in 2 or 3 minutes. I mean, I mentioned in a book, I know a guy back in New York who looks at the New York Post to handicap baseball. And the New York Post, they give you the two starting pitchers, they give you their ERA, they give you their one-loss record, and they give you their ERA and one-loss record over their last three starts. And that's all the information they give you. And I actually know someone who handicaps games out of the New York Post. You know, he's never, I don't know that he's never had a winning season, but I know he's not a winning bettor. There's a lot of information that goes into it. I go through, in the book, I talk about how I go about setting a line, and I take you through an example of a game that's not a real game, but it's a game that I picked because there were a lot of peculiar things in the charts and in the information, and I want to take people through it and how to look at the charts, how to figure out the offensive production that you can expect, the pitching production that you can expect. And the one thing that most people don't do is they don't give enough attention to the bullpens. Because even Max Scherzer signed with the Washington Nationals for $30 million a year over the winter. He's going to get $210 million over 7 years. Max Scherzer, as a pitcher in his career, has one complete game and last year averaged 6 innings per start. So even though if you see Scherzer against what calls an average pitcher, a guy like an Ivan Nova, he's out, he's injured now, but I just an average guy with a 4 ERA, he's just an average run-of-the-mill major league pitcher, a solid 3 starter. Scherzer's going to only pitch 6 innings, so you're going to have 3 innings of that game that you have to account for what's coming behind him and what's coming in the bullpen on the other side, but the line with Scherzer against the number 3 run-of-the-mill pitcher, you're probably going to be laying better than 2-1. But that might be a fair line if those two guys were going to pitch the whole game. You might think that 2-1 is a fair line, and we'd have to actually run the numbers on that game. But with the bullpens coming into play, the games are, for the most part, lined based on starting pitchers, but starting pitchers are only 2/3 of the battle. You have to know what's coming in the bullpens, and you have to be able to figure out or account for the bullpens. So that's, I think, the biggest mistake that people make when they look at these things is they don't account for all of the different pieces of the game. And, you know, in my book, I try to take everybody through that. And I don't want to use the word teach because I give you my perspective. This is the way I do it. This is the way I've learned to do it. This is the way I think makes sense. There are a lot of guys in handicap baseball very, very well. But you've got to make sure that you account for all of the different pieces. And, you know, I have several chapters that talk about all the adjustments and all the things that you have to look at before you're ready to make a bet on a game.
So they don't announce who they're going to replace the pitcher with, right? You know it's somebody from the bullpen, but right. You don't know who it's going to be.
You probably know who the closer is, and you probably know who the setup guy is.
Well, both of those statements are true. However, there's also another adjustment that you need to make. Because if you are, let's say, I'm just going to give you an example. Let's say the Braves are playing the Phillies, and it's 4-3 Braves. There's first and third, one out in the bottom of the 8th inning. Now, last year, this guy's on the Yankees now, but his name is Carpenter. Dan was the setup guy for the Philly, for the Braves. I'm sorry. Carpenter would be in the game with first and third and one out in the 8th inning before the closer comes in. However, with Ryan Howard coming up, Ryan Howard hits the hell out of the ball against right-handed pitching, but not nearly as well against lefties. So you're going to see the lefty to pitch to Ryan Howard, and then you're going to see somebody else behind Ryan Howard for the next batter. So you have to be aware of that fact that righty-lefty is a huge, huge determinative factor in baseball matchups. And so whoever is the Braves lefty in the bullpen, and they've gone through several because they've had guys hurt, but they had a guy named Johnny Venters who was terrific. Luis Avalon, who's a very good setup man. You're going to see the lefty. So the adjustment, the first adjustment is the Braves are going to bring in the lefty to pitch to Howard. The second adjustment is Ryan Sandberg going to let Howard bat, or is he going to bring in a righty who hits lefties well? So to face the lefty who came in. So that's part of the intrigue of handicapping baseball, is you're betting on a game and it's almost a given that you're not sure who's going to be in the game in the crucial at bat of the game. If the Braves let's put it another way. Let's give you a football analogy. If the Colts are playing the Broncos and it's 23 all in the fourth quarter and there's 6 minutes left, either Andrew Luck or Peyton Manning, whoever's team has the ball, is going to be on the field. You know that. Okay? In baseball, you don't know that. You just don't know who it's going to be. So it's a little bit different. So there's a lot of little battles in baseball that get fought, and you've got to wager on the game, and you're not even sure who's going to be, you know, your captain, your general. You're not sure who's going to be in the game.
Seems like it'd be good to have a bug in the manager's,
Somewhere in the book you say you watch as many baseball games as you can, sometimes three or five at a time. What kind of information does this give you compared to just using the statistics?
Well, the first thing I always do is I make a number off of the numbers. I mean, I make my betting number, my baseline betting number off of the numbers, and then I have several adjustments, and I go through them. There's one chapter on adjustments, the lefty-righty stuff that we talked about, defensive adjustments, all of these different things, and there's a total of 12 of them. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
What you get from watching
TV.
Right, yeah. I believe in the eye test. And when you've watched enough baseball and you've watched as much baseball as I have in a lifetime, you can see when a pitcher is, his mechanics are a little bit off and he's throwing the ball, but he's really not opening. He's not driving with his shoulder and he's leaving all of his pitches high. You can see when a hitter, they call it stepping in the bucket, but instead of stepping forward towards the pitcher as you begin your swing, you start to step away towards, if you were a righty, towards the third base dugout. These things happen to all hitters. That's why hitters go into slumps. That's why pitchers go into slumps. And you can see these things happening. And sometimes it's all not always in the numbers. And when you see a guy who is in bad form or who's swinging at balls, a hitter that typically has a very good command of the strike zone, but for whatever reason he's in a slump and he's swinging at pitches that are bouncing or that are way below the strike zone, you can see these things. And so the eye test, if you have enough experience watching the game, you see things that get into your mind. And, I'll make bets that on teams or on players or whatever it is that don't pass the eye test, but only if I see really what I consider a magnificent value. But for the most part, I know what the value is after I've run the numbers, but I want to see things that pass the eye test. And I've also been able to spot injuries. You see a guy who's just not throwing right. His motion isn't right. You can see this stuff, and it's just right there in front of you. And if you have enough experience watching it, you can pick up on things.
You're talking about eye tests, but what about the ear test? Do you do it with the sound on or off when you're watching all these games?
I always listen to the announcers, because if I were going to give somebody who is just beginning to bet baseball seriously some advice, the first thing I would tell him is read all the beat writers for the different teams. You can find them on Twitter. They're easy to find. You can find the newspapers and the articles. All that stuff is easy to find. And the same thing with the announcers, because the announcers hang out with the players before and after the game. They're down in the field watching batting practice. And if a guy's shoulder is barking, or if somebody last year, perfect example, David Wright played for the Mets, played through the entire season, but he had a bad shoulder. And he kept saying, his shoulder is fine, everything is okay, I'm not hitting, but it's not because of the shoulder. And then after the season, he came out and said, boy, I can't believe I made it through the season. My shoulder was killing me. But the Mets announcers, just about every day, were talking about right shoulder and how much it was affecting his swing and why he wasn't. David Wright is a guy that when he is going well, he's hitting the ball to right center field, and that's his power stroke. But he wasn't doing it last year because he was swinging early because of his shoulder problems. And as a result, he was pulling the ball a lot more. He made him a lot less effective. And if you listen to the Mets announcers every day, you knew exactly what was going on, and you could really have made some money knowing that the problems were there, but they weren't being acknowledged.
In Las Vegas, there's a daily Monday through Friday radio show called the Las Vegas Sports Line, where one of the hosts, Dave Koken, gives his daily baseball picks. Some games he bets, some games he stays away from, and he'll tell you why. He sounds knowledgeable to me, but I'm a video poker guy. I'm not a baseball junkie. Let's say I blindly followed Koken's picks over a baseball season whenever I could find it the same or better number as the one he mentioned on the air. Betting, say, $200 a game. How do you think I'd do over a season?
Well, if you follow, Dave happens to be a guy who has a tremendous baseball opinion. He's a huge fan of the game. He's been betting it forever, and he knows he's just tremendous. He has a vast amount of knowledge about baseball and how to bet it. You would do well. You would make money for sure. But the one thing that I would suggest, if you're going to follow somebody, give them a real opportunity to show you what they can do, but don't pick and choose the bets, because if you're going to follow somebody, they have a reason for every bet that they make. Play them all or don't play any, because if you're trying to pick and choose, then you're handicapping the handicapper when really all you want to do is follow the handicapper. A guy like Dave, you would certainly make money. There are other people in town who I would tell you absolutely not. You've got no chance because he's not that good, but I wouldn't say that about Dave. I think he's tremendous.
How much money will they take on baseball here in town? How much money can you get down on a game?
That's a good question. A couple of dimes at least. I'm not really sure. I don't think you can get 10 dimes down, but two dimes, three dimes, I think you probably could.
Where dime is $1,000.
Yes, right.
Now, you're a known bettor. You're probably a known wise guy. would they put limits on you as opposed to Richard, who they think knows squat about baseball?
Well, I don't bet at those levels. There was a time when I did. I'm not comfortable betting at those levels anymore. So there's never going to have to be putting limits on me. But I can tell you that there are a couple of offshore places that I do bet. And the reason I love the offshores is because I have a very set schedule. Handicapping a full baseball card is at least a 4 to 5 hour endeavor. My pattern is pretty much the same day after day after day for 6 months. Once you get past the first 2 weeks where there's a lot of day games, then the games start here at 4 o'clock, which is great for handicappers. I'll watch games from 4 to 7, and I'll play around, and I'll start to build my spreadsheets for the next day. From 7 to 10, there's only a couple of games. I'll watch those couple of games. I'll have them on in the background, but I'll be doing a lot of my work. Then I want to look at who from what bullpen has pitched during that day, because as we talked about bullpens, the best way I can put this, Clint Hurdle from the Pirates a couple of years ago came out on opening day and he said, I will not pitch my two bullpen guys, Mark Melancon, my setup guy, and Jason Grilli, my closer, more than 2 days in a row. It's not going to happen. If they pitch 2 days in a row, they get the following day off. Now, for a handicapper like me, that information is solid gold. And I knew it, and he kept up with that until the last 2 weeks of the season when he was in a pennant race, and then he changed. But at that point, he couldn't do too much damage to his relievers. But that type of information, I always look at bullpens. I want to know who's available. Pretty much any manager is going to give a guy off if he's pitched 3 days in a row. You're not going to see him. It doesn't matter if he's the best closer in baseball. Mariano Rivera, maybe a half a dozen times in his career, pitched more than 3 days in a row during the regular season. It just doesn't happen. But if you get caught in a 16-inning game and he's the only guy left in the bullpen, well, then you do what you have to do. But for the most part, you're going to see guys stick to patterns and you know. So I do all of that work. I figure all of these things out. I know who I'm expecting to pitch. I know how many innings I'm expecting from the starters. I get all of that information together. And then just about midnight, maybe 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm ready to attack. And that's very fortuitous for me because the overnight lines are put up at most of these offshore sports books. Some of them are earlier, like there's sports books called Chris and Betmaker. They'll have them up earlier in the day. But really, 10, 11 o'clock at night is when the lines go up.
This is Pacific time you're talking about.
I'm sorry, yes. Always Pacific time because that's the time that I'm working on. And so at that time, I'm ready to attack because if there's value in some of these numbers and I'm not ready to hit the openers, you can bet that somebody's going to get to them before I wake up at 7:30 in the morning, and then I'm just going to be, you know, the expression is SOL. So I always want to be ready to attack the openers. If there's a game that I think is going to move, like if I want to fade one of the big pitchers, like let's say I find a lot of value going against Clayton Kershaw on one night, I'm certainly not going to bet that on the openers because Clayton Kershaw, way more often than not, is going to take the money. He's, you know, he was 21-4 last year. His ERA was, you know, in the ones. So people are going to bet on Clayton Kershaw. So I know what I want to attack and what I don't want to attack, but you always want to be ready to attack the openers because lines can move. What's +134 at 10 p.m. Pacific time might be +119, you know, in the morning, and you know, then the value's gone. You've lost the bet.
What do you think your edge is, or do you go back over the prior years and say my edge for the year was X?
I always do a very detailed postmortem of my season. I've done extraordinarily well in what they call season win bets and futures the last 3 years. I think I'm 28-11 with 2 units of play. I've done very, very well on those. But I always also try to look at every category. I look at totals. I look at the favorites I bet, and I look at the underdogs I bet. It's always the truth that you can find as much value in some favorites as you can in some underdogs. However, I don't bet a lot of favorites, especially bigger favorites, because even though the value was there, Steve Fezzik and I have this, we get into this at least 2 or 3 times a year, and he screams at me, and theoretically he's correct that value is value, and if it's there, you've got to bet it. I don't agree with that, because if you have, let's say a team like the Dodgers, and I'm going to use Kershaw again, and my work tells me the Dodgers with Kershaw against Arizona with Trevor Cahill is going to, let's say I expect the Dodgers to have 8 more base runners in the game, okay? And that's kind of how I begin my handicap is predicting base runners. Well, if Kershaw is -245 and I lose a unit with Kershaw, it's not the fact that there wasn't value there. The value may very well be there. It's that if I have a defined bankroll and I just can't go get more money whenever I want to, which, you know, I can't. Maybe some people can. I don't think that's the way to do it. But if I can't, if I lose 2.5 units now, I've got to go get those 2.5 units back. And it's very difficult to do that. And, you know, my bankroll just can't afford to lose that many favorites because of how devastating it is to the bankroll, regardless of value. I mean, you find a value.
Well, then you're overbetting your bankroll.
I don't know if I agree with that because I always start with 50 units. And I don't use Kelly because I think Kelly is way too aggressive, especially on favorites. But it's just such a psychological blow to lose a 2.5. If I go 1-3 on a night and lose 2.3 units, you know, it happens 3 times a week, probably 2 or 3 times a week, whatever. But if I go 1-4 and lose 6.5 units, you know, 6.5 units in baseball, what I strive to do because I bet mostly underdogs is I strive to win half of my games and I'm going to win many, many units because I'm mostly playing from the plus side. The other part of it is most of the value, it's not so much true anymore, but it's still true to an extent. Most of the value is on the underdogs because the public loves to bet big pitchers and big favorites because they think it's so much easier to find a winner. And that may be true, but, you know, it's psychologically, I don't handle it well. I know I don't handle it well.
Well, I mean, this is true of a lot of gamblers. They don't like variance. And most people don't bet full Kelly because, you know, it's a lot of variance and they can't handle it.
Yes.
But you can pick a number like half Kelly or quarter Kelly. There's nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely.
But the two bones I had to pick with the book were, one was your method of this 50 units, which it's hard to know how many units you should have without knowing what your edge is or what you think your edge is. But the other thing is, and I don't know if I'm right or wrong about this because I don't know enough about baseball. The other question I had was this idea about people on streaks, which in other sports, this has been proven to be a myth, you know, the myth of the hot hand in basketball. Mm-hmm. It's you know, they've been able to demonstrate now that there is no hot hand. It's just in people's minds. And you talk about teams that are on streaks, and I'm wondering if this is something that has actually been analyzed and whether, you know, I mean, my immediate thought was, oh, this is voodoo, right, this idea of a streak.
Well, streaks happen. I mean, they do happen.
They do happen, but it's just variance, right? It's a bell curve. And
it's really not in baseball. And I'm trying to think of
a team that has won 3 games in a row is more likely to win the next game than a team that has lost 3 games in a row, and that you strongly believe in.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I want to be clear about this because I can't give you an authority here to prove this, but in baseball, every single day, the streak, the momentum depends upon that day's starting pitchers, okay? I truly believe that. A team that's playing, but teams do play well for months at a time. What you will see in baseball that you won't see in other sports is you will see, and you can break it all the way down, you will see a team that averages 4.1 runs a game. They catch fire at a particular point, and over 15 to 20 games, they might average 6.5 runs. I mean, that's an extreme, a 2-run difference, but it does happen. And then you'll see them back down. Teams do get hot. They do. They're seeing the ball well, or for whatever reason.
In my mind, and again, I don't know if anybody's actually analyzed this, but in my mind, you know, if we flip a coin 1,000 times, sometimes heads is going to come up 32 times in a row. I mean, it gets really hot.
Understood.
You know.
Understood.
But it's still 50-50.
Agreed. But the reason that this is a little bit different is because if you're flipping a coin, you have the same guy flipping the same coin using the same motion every time. In baseball, you don't have that. What you may have one day is you may have, let's look at the Oakland A's. You may have Sonny Gray pitching on day one. You might have Scott Kazmir pitching on day two. Somebody else is pitching on day three. So every single day, it's a different handicap. But teams do play well or not so well. I mean, you will see a team that might not make an error for, you know, 13, 15 games in a row. They're just playing well. It just does happen. And I agree with you that you don't handicap based on streaks. I know exactly what part of the book you're referring to, because what I said in the book was be careful of streaks. And that's what I said. And I know exactly what you're saying, Richard. And theoretically, I don't disagree with your point. Variance is there. And a lot of these things that happen, a team not making an error for 15 games in a row, I mean, that is just variance to a certain extent. But you also have to respect the variance. And if a team is playing well or not making errors, for whatever reason, a team is tired because they've played. You can only play, I think it's 20 days in a row, maybe 21 days in a row in Major League Baseball. But if a team plays 33 games in 34 days and they're tired, you know, I mean, that is a part of the handicap. And it might look like variance, but it's not variance. It's something else. A different starting pitcher isn't variance. It's something else. That's all I'm saying. So,
But would you – do you change what you bet based solely on, in other words, if you handicap this game and you say this team should be plus 150, but they've lost six games in a row. I mean, would that change whether you bet that team or not?
No. I don't handicap based on streaks.
Okay.
And I will give you the example that I put in the book. The great handicapper Russ Culver, and I'm sure both of you guys know of Russ, used to be the sportsbook director at the Mirage. He won the Hilton Super Contest a number of years ago. He created the Vegas Insider website. He's known as one of the great figures, great gamblers in, you know, the last 30 years in Las Vegas. He's a tremendously intelligent guy. And baseball is his best sport. When Russ used to create the line, which was the Glance Culver line, which is what you saw in the newspaper in the morning every single day, part of his handicap was starting pitchers and part of his handicap was streaks. He would add, if he came up with a line of 120 for a particular team, that team had won four games in a row, he would add 12 cents and make a minus 132. You know, we laugh about that now because that's the way it used to be done. There's nothing done that's as simplistic as that these days. But that's the way it used to be done. And, yeah, Russ used to set the line based on streaks. But, no, I don't have
that. Well, but also his motivation is a little different because he knows that the public likes to bet on those streaks.
Yes.
And he's trying to influence which side the money comes down on.
That is an outstanding point. You're 100%
so,
right.
You know, so yeah, it makes sense for him to do. Okay. That doesn't mean he would bet them at those lines.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to throw it out there because that's the way he used to do it, and it was germane to what we were talking about. But yeah, you're 100% right.
Your website is palmtreehandicapping.com. Other than purchasing your book there for either $19.95 or $29.95, depending on whether you want a digital copy or a bound pamphlet, what other information may be found on that site?
Well, I appreciate you bringing it up, palmtreehandicapping.com. I started it last year. I started for the purpose of selling the book. I post picks on there every single day. I don't sell information. I don't sell picks. I've sold a book. People can, if they buy it, they can make a judgment whether or not it's worth the price. But I don't sell anything else. So I will write. During the season, I will write up at least one play, a very detailed, you know, three or four paragraph write-up on why I'm betting a particular team. If I have time, I'll write up the other picks. If not, I'll just list them. And, I put my picks up there. And for the most part, I'm accountable. People get on me that all the time. You don't keep an accurate record. People don't realize you put picks up there in the morning. You might find a line that's moved. You like a game, so you add it later on in the day. You may get off a game in live betting in the fifth inning. Hey, there's four or five different records that you have to keep everybody happy. But I will always post the information for people, the picks, and do the best I can on the record. I won't charge anybody anything, and I write blogs several times a week about different things that are happening in the game. I'm going to start the first Monday of the season. I'm going to start a blog that looks at baseball from a handicapping perspective, and I will write up two or three things that I see during the course of the week that I think will affect future value on different teams, different players. The blog doesn't really get into fantasy baseball because there are so many other people writing fantasy baseball blogs. I didn't see any reason to compete with them, but it's really, for me, I enjoy the writing. I love putting the information out there, and I have met some wonderful people just by putting the information out there and having them contact me, and I've made a lot of great friends. So I do it all for free. I enjoy it, and I will put all the information I have time to write out there.
Very good. We're talking to Eric Strasser on his book, Betting Baseball for Profit. We have a few more questions for him. First, we have to take a commercial break.
Before you do the commercials, I just want to say we have to come back in time to at least hear what he thinks some of the best bets listeners can make before the season starts.
For the futures bet. Absolutely. Yeah. That's the top one on my list. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more games than anybody else has. Throughout March, there are two separate casino-wide progressives running 24/7 in the $600,000 March Money Madness. The bigger of the two progressives begins at $10,000 and must be hit before it reaches $25,000. One winner gets the prize each time, and everybody actively playing with a player's card earns $25 in free play when it goes off. Immediately thereafter, it starts again at $10,000. Simultaneously, there's another progressive which begins at 1,000 and must be hit by 25,000. This too will start immediately after it's hit, and it's predicted to be hit three times a day all month long. Next week's class at noon Wednesday in the Grandview Lounge will be 944 Deuces Bonus. This game is a cross between bonus poker and Deuces Wild, where you get in bonus poker you get more for four twos, threes, and fours, and more yet for four aces. In Deuces Bonus, you get more for five threes, fours, and fives, in addition to a lot more for five aces. The primary place where you pay for these higher returns is in you get your money back for straights rather than the double money that you normally get in Deuces Wild. At the Palms, on the weekly 7 p.m. drawings on Friday, winners share $10,000. You do not need to be there to win. You must claim prize by midnight. Double entries between 4 and 6 p.m. Friday afternoons, and later that evening between 7:45 and midnight, five times entries. Play for prizes, PFP, through Friday, March 27th. The prizes are Chevron gas cards. You can earn up to $390 per day, Monday through Friday. You can redeem that much. The gift cards may be earned and redeemed Monday through Friday at a rate of 0.20%. VideoPoker.com is the best place to practice a lot of video poker games where it's available nowhere else. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, it allows you to get correction on most games, including quick quads. They have a game of the week. This week, it is Super Triple Play. This is a 6-coin per line game where you get much higher returns for all four of a kinds and sometimes a straight flush. The game adds about 0.25% to the base game, which varies a little bit by game. The strategy changes as well. The variance is much higher. As an example, 7-5 Super Aces bonus. The regular game returns 98.85% with a variance of 63. Super Triple Play version, the same game has a return of 99.05%, which is 0.2 more, and the variance is 201. If you're going to hit a lot of aces today, you're really going to be glad you're playing this game. If you're not, you won't be. All right. This baseball season starts April 6th. So that's a couple weeks away if you're catching the show live. You can make future bets between now and then. What would be some good future bets that you think our listeners could take advantage of?
Okay, I'm going to give you, if this is okay, I'm going to give you two what they call props, and I'm going to give you two season win totals, and I'll try and be brief because I like to talk too much. Two of the props that are out there are, the first one is any pitcher over 17 losses. I did the research on this about 5 years ago, and it's just a fact. There has not been a season in Major League Baseball that a pitcher has not lost 17 games since I started looking at it in 1999. We're on a 15-year non-losing streak with this bet. And the reason, it kind of makes sense.
And you can get it at even money?
No, you're going to lay somewhere between 110 and 120. There's plenty of 110 out
there. Close to even money.
Yeah, there's plenty of 110 out there. Yeah, I should have mentioned that. Over 17 and a half. I'm sorry, over 17 losses minus 110. William Hill has it at 17 and a half with the plus of plus 135 or so. I wouldn't recommend that. I don't think it's enough of a premium to take the bet. But what happens is, teams that are bad teams, part of the reason they're bad teams is pitchers get injured. And when they have pitchers that are injured, they take some of the older guys that aren't in their future plans anyway, and they keep throwing them out there every fifth day towards the end of the season. It's usually the end of a bad season. They don't care about these pitchers because they're not in their future plans, and the losses just tend to pile up because bad teams with worn out old pitchers that they don't care about, you know, it's, you're not going to expect good results and you don't get good results. But the key to this is it's happened every year for at least the last 15 years. So that's one that I bet every year. The second one that I like is under 49 and a half saves, also minus 110. Now, 49 and a half isn't out there anymore, but 49 is. If you can find 49, I still think it's an okay bet. You really need to get a two-team parlay to get over 49 saves. You have to have a team that's going to win at least 90 games because you have to have that many save chances. And you have to have a closer who's capable of converting, you know, 85% of the save chances. You know, both of those things have to happen to get to get over 49 or get to 50 saves. There are only a couple of teams if that I think are capable of having a good enough closer and being good enough to get to close to 50 saves. I like Seattle a lot this year, but I don't think Fernando Rodney is good enough. I think that the Nationals have a chance because I think they're going to win a lot of games. I think they're the best team in baseball. The Dodgers don't have a chance because their closer is out now for the first month of the season, Kenley Jansen. So the only other team I think has a chance is the Angels with Houston Street, who's a very good closer. But Street has not had the type of save conversion rate over his career that I trust him to get anywhere near 50. And for the Nationals, their closer is Craig Stammen. I just don't think he's good enough. There are some good closers out there in baseball. David Robinson is one. Craig Kimbrell is one with Atlanta. But those teams aren't good enough to get, you know, over 90 wins, in my opinion. So I don't think anybody's going to hit this two-team parlay. And I've bet under 49 and a half. The prevailing number right now is 48 and a half, but there are a couple of books, especially offshore, that still have 49. And if you can find 49, I still think it's a good bet.
All right. You said you're going to give us
under 49.
Under 49 saves.
You were going to give us four different. You've given us two so far.
Okay. Now, the other two are
Don't let us down.
Two season win totals. I'm going to give you one over. I'm going to give you one under, just so people like to bet either way, they get something.
Is Baltimore one of them?
I like Baltimore a lot. Baltimore last year won 96 games. And if you go by the numbers, they were a 96-win team. They were legit 96 wins. They lost a couple of guys. They lost Nelson Cruz, who hit a ton of home runs for them last year. And they lost Nick Markakis, who was their starting right fielder. But they are getting back Matt Wieters, who was their catcher, who had Tommy John surgery last year and missed all but 26 games, and Manny Machado, who is a all-star third baseman, and Manny Machado is back this year as well and healthy and looking really good. The total is just too low. The division has gotten a little better, but not much better. The Orioles have not dropped. They're 13 games from 96 to 83, I think, is way too low. I think the Orioles are an 88 to 91 win team, so I think there's a good bet there on the over 83. The one I like under is the St. Louis Cardinals. They won 90 games last year. They were really an 83-win team by the numbers. They had a tragedy over the offseason. Their right fielder, Oscar Tavares, he died in a car accident, and that was a big blow to them. They went to Atlanta and got Jason Hayward to play left field, but they had to give up a starting pitcher, Shelby Miller, who is an up-and-coming starter. Adam Wainwright's health is in question. He still hasn't made his first appearance of the spring. I just don't think the Cardinals are good enough to win 88 games, I'm sorry, in what is a very competitive division with four teams that should be very close to 80 wins. So I like the Cardinals under, and I like the Orioles over.
Briefly, what's your favorite sports book to bet in Vegas? You've already said you stay away from stations now.
I do. I like William Hill because William Hill has a very wide variety of opportunities. They have a lot of different things that some other books don't have. So, but if anybody wants more information, as you mentioned, Bob, and I appreciate it, palmtreehandicapping.com, get in touch with me. The book's available there, and anybody gets in touch with me, I love to talk baseball. So,
thank you.
All right, we're looking at Lawrence, and he might be giving us signals. He might not. All right. Thank you, Derek Strasser. Thank you, Richard. Good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.